Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Don't worry about it.
And keep your eyes wide. The chance won't
come on, get it going,
again.
Man.
And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling.
We all know the lyrics. Follow the bouncing ball.
For the loser now will be later to win. For the times
they are a changing. The loser now will be the win. You're right, Bobby. Right now, the losers are the winners. Bonnie Frank, the loser, is the winner. He's still a loser to me. He'll always be a loser to me. But he thinks he's a winner. That's the difference between your song and reality. They're trying to run the country, Bobby.
Congressman, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway. Don't lock up the hall. Or he that gets hurt.
What a circle, man, from the 60s till now. You must be kidding. I'm a lucky man. I mean, I've been around like enough decades as a conscious being to see the times they are a-changing. Let me give you an example. All right, thanks, Bobby. Give him up, whatever. I was going to say something that I can't say because his radio would have been very funny about matzah, but all right, we'll let that go. If you go on to michaelsavage.com, you'll see the times they are changing. Let me start with an absurd story, but true. Came out of London. The godmother, transsexual mafia boss who wears lipstick and calls himself Kitty, arrested by Italian police. Go ahead, call him a name, see what happens to you. A transsexual mafia boss has been arrested by police in what is believed to be the first case of its kind. Ugo Gabriel, 27, who insisted on being called Kitty, was held by armed officers in a raid which also saw 27 other mobsters arrested. Gabriel ran a sophisticated drugs and prostitution racket. His mugshot showed him as thick-set and butch-looking, but he also had very defined plucked feminine eyebrows and was wearing lipstick when held in Naples. Now, you say, how could this be? How could this be? Because traditionally, homosexuality was not permitted in organized criminal circles. Okay? The article says, traditionally, the mafia has been a haven of machismo, although there have been gay mobsters in the past, most famously Johnny Boy D'Amato, who was gunned down in New York in 1992 for being homosexual. At his murder trial, mafia hitman Anthony Capo, a former soldier for the New Jersey-based De Cavalcante family, testified that he killed D'Amato after finding out about his secret life. He said, nobody's going to respect us if we have a gay homosexual boss sitting down discussing La Cosa Nostra business. Luigi Romolo Carino, a top mafia author based in Italy, said something different. He said, there is a lot more homosexual activity in the mob than you think, but it is very discreet. Now, this is not the biggest story in the world, but I'm reading it for a reason, because at times they are a-changing. When you have people who know nothing about economics running the economy, you know what's going to happen. Every way you turn, the times they are changing. Everything is upside down, and we know it. We're living through the greatest social unease in my life. Another Democrat weasel calls for the fairness doctrine. A shady congressman from upstate New York is calling for the fairness doctrine along with Bill Clinton. Now, what do they have to hide that they don't want our voices on the air? You notice the loudest voices against conservative talkers are those with something to hide. Here's another one. Founder of U.S. Muslim TV charged with beheading wife. That's right, I'm not making it up. Buffalo News, Orchard Park, New York. Police are investigating a gruesome killing, the beheading of a woman after her husband, an influential member of the local Muslim community, reported her death. He's being charged with cutting her head off. He created the network in 2004 to give a more positive image of Islam. Speaking about the intolerance of some Muslims, go to the right side. of MichaelSavage.com. Those of you who are squeamish and don't want to face reality, you're living in the 1930s all over again, only now they're not wearing armbands. You see, a Muslim mob attacked a Jewish center in Toronto at a Canadian university, and they marched with signs saying, "Jews haven't learned, they need Hitler and the swastika more than before." And there's the picture of the little nice child wearing a headscarf holding up the Hitler sign. "It's so weird," says the article, "how a country where multiculturalist tolerance is enforced via elaborate microfascism could slip into something that seems very much like a pogrom." And, of course, Nancy Mussolini forced the bill down the throats of Congress and then dashed off to Rome to kiss the finger of the Pope. We don't know where to turn anymore. It's all crazy. Here's another one. 13-year-old father in England was allowed to share a bed with his girlfriend, 14. They had a baby. You hear this? A 13-year-old boy? Asked how he would cope financially, Alfie, the 13-year-old father, replied, "What's financially? But the government will take care of him." They've had Obama land in England for quite a while now. So a 13-year-old father is nothing for them. 1-800-449-8255. There are other stories. There are other stories. The Vatican buries the hatchet with Charles Darwin. That should get you primitivists excited. The Vatican says Charles Darwin was on the right track when he claimed that man descended from the apes. Now, I will talk about it later. I know this is a hot-button topic, but I've covered it. You see, evolution is compatible with the existence of God. It's not either or, it's both and. I've covered this before. Being that I'm the most educated, most brilliant man in the history of radio, and it's true, and I may as well say it, I'm not going to mince words. You know, sometimes when you boast, it's embarrassing if it's false. But sometimes when you boast and it's true, it's necessary, particularly in a field filled with dolts who were high school, they never went past high school and pretend that they're geniuses. I'll tell you that about a lot of people in the media never went past high school, and I'm sick and tired of them pretending they're geniuses. They may be intuitively smart, they may be inherently smart, good for them, and good broadcasters, but they have no education, and it shows in almost every statement they make. The fact of the matter is, you can believe in God and the theory of evolution at the same time, and I covered this on the show. They're not incompatible with each other. It's not like they're wrong and I'm right and they're wrong. How does that work? How can you believe in the origin of the species and the descent of man and believe in God? How can you believe in both? Because I once covered this. I had a brilliant caller who explained it from a rabbinic point of view, although it's not in the Bible, that man came late in the history of the earth. In other words, when you see the Miocene, the Pleistocene, the Paleolithic, and whatever, and you see the dinosaurs millions of years ago, you say, well, how could that be compatible? We weren't here, and many of you believe God put man here at the same time as all the animals. What it is that man, God was experimenting with this planet called Earth. He was shaping things and changing things, and then he let the experiment develop. And he tried the ape, then he tried the Neanderthal, and he didn't like what he created, so he permitted evolution to occur, or evolution was set up to occur so that man then evolved, and here we are. Now you say, well, how does that work with a 5,000-year time frame? You know, excuse me, how does that work with the seven-day cycle in which God created the earth, and then he rested? And as we described to you on the show many, many times, a day to us is not a day to God. One day, biblically, could be 100 million years. I'm giving you a time frame of 10 million years. And so, therefore, it is compatible. You can believe in science, you can believe in evolution, and you can believe in the origin of the species and the descent of man. But that's just one story. I know most of you want to talk about the political topics as well, and you can do so by calling the one number, which is 1-800-449-8255. And go to MichaelSavage.com and see the stories. We have a special treat for you, and I think it's going to be very lively. At 30 minutes after the hour today, we have Attorney General Jerry Brown of the state of California, who wishes to be governor again, to join us right here on the Savage Nation. I know many of you want to ask him questions. Even though you may live in Vermont or Maine or New York or California, I'm sure you have many questions and statements for governor, would-be governor again, Jerry Brown. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be
drenched. It is the Savage Nation. I've been reading, you know, crazy stories that are going on around the world. It's like the whole world's upside down. And that's what we're talking about in the Savage Nation. And I have an interesting observation to make. It's interesting to me anyway. And that is this Attorney General of the state of California, Jerry Brown, will be on the show in about 10 minutes. Now, he's running for governor. He will be running for governor. At least that's what we think is going to happen. And the country has become such that in states such as New York and California, for example, you have a choice between a liberal and a far-left liberal, or a moderate liberal and an extremist liberal. There's no Republican Party anymore. It's like there's no England anymore. And what's intriguing is that if you assume that Jerry Brown's going to run against Gavin Newsom, they actually need the conservative vote to win. One of them needs the conservative vote to win. And so it puts them in the odd position, as it does any other liberal politician who wants to get elected or reelected, to actually go out and appeal to the other side in order to win. In other words, they're both going to get the Democrat votes. So what's going to be the differential here? It's the swing voters and the conservative voters. And so, therefore, you actually have more power than you know. You, the audience who are listening to this show, it's very significant. This audience is very significant. Make no mistake about it. You're so significant that Bill Clinton wants me taken off the air. You're so significant that congressmen and senators you never heard of who have things to hide want Michael Savage and Rush and others taken off the air. Do you understand that? And that's what you have to understand. We're making a big difference. But I want to remind those of you on the other side what the First Amendment actually is and what liberalism is. You know, there was a time in America when liberals would say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight for the death of your right to say it. Of course, they didn't mean that, but that's what they said. Today you have liberals who say, I may disagree with what you say, but I would kill you rather than listening to it. That's what happened to the liberals of today. They're not liberals by definition, people like that. You call them anything you want, neo-fascists, it doesn't matter what label you give them. They're the dark forces of nature. Chicago, Michael, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, when I heard Bill Clinton on WNPR, it made me sick, and he's got you scope locked. And first thing I said to myself is I turned to my wife, I go, you know, you're picking on the wrong guy. I gave it a boxing equation. I said, you're the Ken Buchanan of talk radio. He was a lightweight boxer from Scotland who attacked everybody who went after him with a viciousness that had never been seen in the ring before.
And well, that's right. If Bill Clinton comes after me, since he's a private citizen, I'm going to see if we can sue him personally for trying to take away my millstone. Because as I said yesterday, you know, it's one thing to not like somebody politically. It's another thing to try to stop them from making a living. And the fact is, the Bible says, he who takes away a man's millstone, it is as though they have killed him. If they want to try to kill us, we have a right to fight with anything we have in our corner. I'm going to make an announcement very soon, probably by Monday, that no one's heard about yet. Listen to me very carefully. Michael Savage is going to make an announcement Monday that has not been made yet about one of the most preeminent law firms in America. A nonprofit law firm is taking my case. I will have access to 550 lawyers, conservative lawyers, willing to go to battle for me in the courts to make certain that the dark forces of nature, such as Bill Clinton and Debbie Stabenow, do not close down freedom of speech. So don't worry about me. Thank you. I'm not going to take it. I didn't come all this way to have a fraudulent hillbilly take me off the air. Now, you got to ask yourself, why would a man who's made so much money, despite all the criticism, what is it that he's hiding? Why does he want us off the air? What is it that we do that's so dangerous? You have to think about this very carefully, you know? Anywho, here we are. MichaelSavage.com has got stories. Here's one. Billions for weatherization and stimulus question. You hear the boondoggle. The boondoggle put out by the Chairman Mao's grandson, Obama. Chairman Obama has boondoggles upon boondoggles. You can't even find them. No one's in there. I found a few. $787 billion economic stimulus program. There's one in there called weatherization, money for weatherization. I don't know where it is in here and how much it's for. But $1.5 billion for carbon capture projects. That's plain old grift for guys like Al Gorleone. $255 million to build a polar icebreaker for the Coast Guard. You hear? I thought the Coast Guard was supposed to protect our coasts instead of protecting us from what? Seals and polar bears? But it's just a boondoggle. It's a shipbuilding contract, in other words, for Mississippi, probably. You know? But the weatherization one is astounding. Nobody knows what it is. But I can guarantee you, whoever gave Obama $5 million owns a weatherization company that's going to get $100 million in contracts. Follow the money. This I can guarantee you. That's how it works. 95 to 5. 1-800-449-8255. $2 billion for manufacturing advanced batteries for hybrid cars. I don't think you know one of the scandals of the age is that batteries for hybrid cars are so impervious to breaking down that they don't know what to do with them. They have to build new landfills for them. So all of the self-righteous people driving around in Priuses or cars that use these batteries are actually polluting the environment in the long term far more are you than with your dinosaur, internal combustion engine without these batteries. We went through this yesterday. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Hartford, Connecticut. Ferris, quickly go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. I wonder if...
Go ahead. We got very little time. Go ahead.
Well, I'd just like to draw a comparison between the experience factor. When I was told that there is no substitute for experience, I'm reminded of it lately, not only in the presidential category, but also in these two airline crashes. One, you had a very experienced individual in the form of Chesley Sollenberger, who put that plane down.
Who was the pilot of this commuter plane crash? He was inexperienced? I didn't follow that part of it.
You said he, and I want to make this point. It happened to be a she, and no one has expressed
it. Oh. Oh, well, girls fly, you know that.
Girls fly. Now, I wonder if she was hired according to a quota system. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe she was working her way up to 747s, and she was just training. Unfortunately, whoops.
Yes,
could have happened to anybody. I mean, I guess in a few years under Obama, the blind will be flying because you want to make certain you don't discriminate. And I think it's very important that we have blind people being able to fly because I don't want them to feel bad. Don't you agree, Ferris, that we should open up airline flying to blind people?
Well, when you think...
I think we should put blind people behind the in pilot seats because there's no reason to inhibit people's desire to achieve. We're all equal. We all know we're all equal. And unfortunately, if you were blinded either at birth, God forbid, and don't think I'm making light of being blind. I mean, my brother was blind. But I'll make any sarcastic point I want to make my point. You know, why don't you put a blind person in an airplane? See if you'll fly in it. All Liberal Airways. It is the Savage Nation. The time is 34 minutes after the hour. As promised, I have a very interesting guest for you. It's rare that a Democrat will come on this show. Attorney General Jerry Brown wants to be governor. He's agreed to come on the Savage Nation. Jerry, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good. I haven't said I've wanted to be governor. I said I'm thinking about it. And I'm.
Oh, I thought it was a given.
Doing my job as Attorney General. That is my number one priority.
You know, Governor, I was in a restaurant in North Beach the other night, and lo and behold, who walks in but your would-be competitor, Gavin Newsom. And, he's been in favor of homosexual marriage from the beginning. But I got to tell you, I gave money to your campaign last time because I went to your speech up at one of the buildings, and you had funded a military academy in Oakland. And I said, all right, you're a liberal Democrat. But you've moved to the center and you're a realist. I don't understand one thing. With regard to Proposition 8, how can you, as the highest law enforcement official in the state of California, work to nullify the will of millions of voters? It doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, let me explain it. I defended the existing and traditional marriage laws of California last May in a very long and, I thought, eloquently written brief and oral advocacy. The court, by a 4-3 decision, rejected the arguments that we put forward for maintaining the existing statute on traditional marriage. They said that, first, marriage is a fundamental right, and secondly, there's no compelling reason why same-sex couples should not enjoy that right as well.
Jerry, the people spoke. We went to the ballot. We did it peacefully. Nobody got violent. We were told we live in a democracy and we voted. We voted on Prop 8 and it won by a fairly large, in fact, it won by a larger majority than Obama won by. And how could the people now vote for you if you run for governor when you say to them your vote is you know, of no meaning to me.
Okay, well, no, the vote is of meaning. But remember, the Supreme Court also in May, in the decision when they struck down the marriage statutes of California, they overruled Proposition 22, which passed in 2000 by 61% of the vote. And that statute was identical to Proposition 8. The only thing different between 8 and 22 was that 8 passed by 52.5.
No, but Jerry, I understand, but you're citing a few judges, not a few million voters.
No, wait a minute. The court is the guardian of the fundamental liberties.
They aren't. Not this court. Look, you can say that, but the people don't see it that way, Jerry. Governor Brown, let me say this. The court seems like a group of elitists who are out for special interests, not to represent the people. The fact of the matter is, millions of people took the time out to say no to homosexual marriage.
Well, in 1964, 65% of the people said no to the fair housing law that had been passed the year before.
Well, I've heard that before, but it doesn't hold water, Jerry, because 7 out of 10 black people voted against gay marriage.
Well, no. Whatever ethnic group voted, the fact
it was higher than that. I'm sorry. It was 9 out of 10 Chinese people voted against gay marriage. I know the numbers. 90% of Chinese voted against gay marriage. 70% of blacks voted against gay marriage. It has nothing to do with civil rights to them. So okay. I'm a white guy, but here you have ethnic people who don't want it either.
Wait a minute. First of all, as far as numbers, Obama won California by a lot more than Proposition 8. Not even close.
But I'm talking about nationally. Nationally. Okay. California's not nationally.
See, I think Obama...
But Jerry, you just made my point. Even in liberal California, the overwhelming majority of people voted against homosexual marriage. What I'm saying is I don't understand from a point of view of a pragmatic man like yourself, an intelligent, pragmatic man, that if you should choose to run for the governorship, how could you appeal to the people after telling the people you're siding with, the homosexual lobby and with the Supreme Court, who is absolutely at odds with the people?
They had all the arguments last May, and they ruled that this was a fundamental right that included same-sex couples as well as the traditional marriage. They said it, and we were arguing against that. They overruled it, and I believe that precedent is the binding law of California, and that they will probably follow it. And I want to point out...
Well, as a great English essayist said, the law is an ass. The people are always right, not the law. The fact of the matter is, why then do you have ballot initiatives if you're going to nullify them?
Well, they have been nullified many times in the past, and as a matter of fact, since the founding of this country, we've had judicial review, starting with Justice Marshall. He struck down congressional statutes and state laws.
That's right. We've had elitist judges in black robes acting like black armbands. How in the world can you expect people to come out and have faith in a system when the system says, you can vote if the results are what we want, but if the results are not what we want, we're going to nullify your vote. What kind of democracy is that?
Well, what kind of a fundamental Bill of Rights is something you can take away with a couple of 52% to 48?
You got that wrong. No one's taking away a right that was never granted. To most sane people, the idea of two men marrying is insane. Most traditionalists, the idea of a man and a woman getting married is the bedrock of Western civilization. In fact, there's not a religion on earth that doesn't see it this way. There's not one religion on earth that doesn't see it this way. And leads me to the next thing, Jerry. Doesn't Proposition 8 and your belief, your position on it, conflict with your religious training?
The court is the guardian of minority rights. And originally, it was property owners who were the minority, and they wanted to protect themselves from the masses.
But you keep making a fallacious argument. We keep hearing about civil rights, and I keep telling you that 7 out of 10 blacks in this recent election said no to homosexual marriage. 9 out of 10 Chinese said no to homosexual marriage. How does that jibe with civil rights if the people who you are referring to and referencing themselves say no to this?
Okay, this is not about politics. This is about the structure of the court, the fundamental rights, the right of the people. The people can amend, but when you try to encroach on what is a fundamental liberty, now you don't think it's a fundamental liberty. Three people out of seven in the Supreme Court of California didn't think it was a fundamental liberty, but the majority, by the way, the chief who wrote this far-reaching opinion was appointed by Pete Wilson, a Republican conservative.
Yeah, to his eternal shame. To me, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is an out-of-control man who, frankly, should be impeached. But, that, you know, that's one man's opinion. I still don't understand one thing. You know, we can disagree on this, which we're going to disagree. I'm not going to change your view. You're not going to change mine. But here you are, Attorney General, the chief law enforcement official. You're a good person. You're a good man. I've met you. We've talked. And yet you're saying that the people's vote doesn't matter, and you're citing the judges. This goes to the whole argument of elitism, which the people despise elitism.
Well, there are constraints on the people. You can't establish slavery. You can't deprive people of a fundamental right. Now, the debate here is you and 52% of the people didn't see it as a right. Well, 48% of the people do see it as a right, and four of the judges out of seven. You may not like that division, but we do have a relationship.
You see, you're using the judges to uphold a position that the majority of the people don't agree with. Who made these judges God Almighty?
Wait a minute. You could put search and seizure up to a vote, and maybe people would take away the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment, the rule against not having to...
But now you're saying that we should entrust our powers to the judges, when the judges have caused so much harm and discord in this country. So let's move to another topic where you're so interested in supporting minority opinion. I'm in the minority in California as a conservative. I'm a minority in the media as a conservative, and yet many of your cohorts in the Democrat Party would like to see me taken off the air with the so-called fairness doctrine. Where would you stand on that?
No, I think you should... I think you have a point of view, and I have a point of view, and they're different. I think the clash can sometimes illuminate the truth better than just a one-sided presentation. So the court itself is divided. The people are divided. You and I are divided in this conversation. I think that illuminates the range of differences and views that we have here in California.
But I'm asking you specifically about the so-called fairness doctrine. I'm sure you're aware of it. Bill Clinton came out yesterday and said he wants it enacted. Debbie Stabenow wants it enacted. Nancy Pelosi wants it enacted. They all want conservative voices constrained in the media. What side would you be on with the so-called fairness doctrine?
I would not I don't know exactly how the fairness doctrine would stop you from doing whatever you're doing. Maybe there's something that I don't know about what you're saying or what the fairness
doctrine... Fairness doctrine is the constraint only on conservative talk radio. It would not apply to any other element of the media. It's aimed strictly at us in the minority in the media. And they want us controlled and constrained and removed from the airwaves. That's what they want. They only want to hear progressive voices that laud Obama and laud the liberal way. Now, you surely couldn't support that. I don't think so.
But I don't think that's a fair description of what's going on. It has a tinge of paranoia connected to it.
So you just said you don't know what it is, but now you're saying my position is paranoiac.
It has that tone, because who's trying to...
Well, you just said you don't know what it is, and now you're telling me that I'm sounding paranoid. First you say you don't know what the fairness doctrine is, then you accuse me of paranoia. That's what they used to do in the Soviet Union with dissidents, Jerry. They would accuse dissidents of being paranoiac and put them in mental hospitals.
Because you are speaking, and you're saying you're not allowed to speak, but you are speaking. How do you explain that? You're on the air.
Apparently there's a disconnect between what I just said and what you're hearing. I didn't say there is a fairness doctrine. I said to you that your cohorts in the liberal Democrat wing of the party want to constrain me through a so-called fairness doctrine.
Well, I think we need a robust range of opinions on the air, and you fit well within the range of robustness.
Well, I hope that when the time comes, if you have any power over that, you will respect what liberals used to always respect, which is opposite opinions, or else we will descend into absolute fascism. Because without dissent, there will be fascism in this country. And whether that dissent is left or right, I believe that a country that's supposedly free must have dissent.
Obviously, you need dissent, and you have dissent everywhere. I'm going to really look into this fairness doctrine, and I want to investigate, would it take you off the air? I want to hear that.
Well, you're making it more broad than it is. Of course, it wouldn't take me off the air. It would take my opinions off the air, is what it would do. Would it apply to NPR? Would NPR, which is all liberal all the time, have to have Michael Savage on or a conservative viewpoint? No, it wouldn't. It is aimed only at Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and in other words, the top five. There's something we're doing that must be right because they're all up in arms over us. I don't understand it with a party that has so much power, what kind of threat we are.
I think you're getting some pretty good ratings, some of those guys.
That's
Ooh. True. So, for maybe better than NPR. But it's a different, look, they're different kind of people. People listen to NPR probably don't want to listen to you. So, I mean, that's just the way the world is. There's different
I understand views. That, right? So they have a right to tune in what they want to listen to. That's exactly our defense, which is that we made it in radio because there's an audience for us. Because they can't find it on TV, they can't find it in most of the cable channels, but they can find it in AM radio where they run conservative talk. So that's why we say let the marketplace determine what people listen to, not the government. But I don't know exactly where you stand on that. You're starting to sound as though you want a little state control over the media.
Well, a little state control wouldn't hurt anybody.
Oh, there you go again. So you want control over the media.
Somewhat ironic. I'm going to look at this fairness doctrine because we haven't had it for 20 years.
Well, it wouldn't apply to California at all because you wouldn't have that power. It would be a federal communications system thing. Let me raise you have a minute for another question?
This doctrine used to say if you have no views of one side, in certain campaigns, if somebody's attacking you, there's got to be some room for the other side. It's an attempt to balance, not to censor.
Now, no, somebody just handed you that. That's not true. That's not it at all. That's not how it's acted out. Somebody gave you false information. That's absolutely false, because if that were true, NPR would have to hire Michael Savage or run Conservative Opinion, and that's not what the intent is of Bill Clinton, Debbie Stabenow, and Nancy Pelosi. They want to shut us up in plain English in more ways than one. But look, we'll get into this another time. Here's another hot-button issue if you got a desire for round three.
Hello?
Governor, are we still connected?
Yeah, we're connected.
Okay, here we have a state that's going broke, as are many states in the union. We have a budget deficit of, what, $41 billion by best estimate? No one knows how much?
Yeah. No.
Right?
Like Washington.
In all the talk about balancing the budget from Arnold Schwarzenegger's so-called Republican, why has there been not one discussion about cutting off services to non-citizens, even in the emergency rooms? That would save $10 to $15 billion. Why is it that the government seems to think that the illegal alien has more rights than the legal citizen?
Well, I don't think that no one says that they have more rights. But even as Meg Whitman said today, that you have children and, you know, they're not responsible for what their parents did, and they ought to be taken care of, and infectious diseases are something else, and the problem is the national law, not when somebody's here and they're in an auto accident or they're bleeding to death. You got to take care of them. That's just basic humanity.
Well, okay, I can understand that, and no one will argue with basic humanity, but I've been in an emergency room three times this year, and let me tell you, I've seen crowds of illegal aliens being treated not for auto wrecks or such, but they're taking their children in for the common cold and the flu. It's costing the state billions and billions of dollars, and yet in all of this rhetoric and argument, not one governor has said, well, you know what, the people can't afford it. We have to cut back somewhere. How about cutting back with regard to benefits for illegal aliens? I mean, I'm bringing up hospitals, but there are many avenues that illegal aliens could be curtailed in some way. The citizen is being told that they have to cut back. Why not the non-citizen?
Well, I think that all citizens are going to have to be cut back. That's exactly what we're talking about. But what are you going to do? This takes the whole point of what do you do? Do you round up several million people and take them down the border?
We don't have to get that draconian, but you could put a CHP officer in every emergency room and say, show us a citizenship card. We can't afford to treat you anymore. Do you know how many hospitals are going bankrupt in this country because of the burden of treating illegal aliens required by federal law? So the state itself, frankly, is going broke not only because of the illegal alien, but because of excessive spending. I would think that you as a governor, you know, if you wanted to run and became governor, would have to look into these things.
Well, yeah, you look into them. There's lots of abuses and there's lots of problems, but there's a lot of people who aren't citizens who are adding more work, who work at low wages. They don't collect their Social Security. So what the net is, whether it's a cost or not, I think that bears more study. If you're talking about the 30...
Well, no, we've done this study. The studies have been done by major universities right in this state, and the net is in the negative. We've heard that they contribute more than they take. It's not true at all. When you add up all the costs, it's actually in the negative. I'm not going to keep you any longer because I think it's very brave of you and very dignified to come on to the Savage Nation. I truly appreciate it. I'd like to ask you one last question, which would be this. If you were to run, and you were to run against Gavin Newsom as the principal opponent, why would you be a better governor than he?
Well, number one, I don't think he's the principal opponent. There's a lot of other people talking about running, so there's a lot of people running. But I would say, in general, without casting comparisons to other possible candidates, I understand how this place works. I know how to get something done, and I have also an understanding that some of the basic values are absolutely, instead of a new California, we're going to have to restore some of the values and the character traits that built the old California.
That would include nullifying homosexual marriage, which certainly didn't build old California, but I guess we'll have to depart on that particular point. Governor Jerry Brown, I wish you great luck and success in your run for whatever you choose to run for, and I thank you very much for having the audacity to come on the Savage Nation.
It is audacity.
You're a very audacious gentleman. Thank you very much.
There's so much more I could have said, but I enjoy it, and we'll leave it there.
You win. Take care. Bye now. I'll be right back. Well, I had Attorney General Jerry Brown, former governor of the state, who wants, I think he's going to run, and I asked him about Proposition 8, that is the homosexual marriage bill. I didn't get a satisfactory answer. I heard that he's in favor of what the judges say. So, in other words, four judges have more power than 40 million people is what he just said. This goes to the whole problem with liberal elitism, which is liberal activism, judicial activism. Everything that we know to be the opposite of a clear and present democracy. I didn't like that answer. I didn't find it satisfying. I then raised the issue of the fairness doctrine. I don't think Jerry Brown knew what it was. And then he came up with, I think, something one of his handlers gave him. And he said, yes, a little state control of the media would be good. There you heard again, liberal statism. And then we talked about illegal aliens cutting back somewhere. And he brought up the hearts and flowers about how much they need the emergency room. And again, I didn't get a satisfactory answer. And so that's the problem with liberals. Either they miss the point on purpose or they miss the point because they don't really understand what you're saying. You want to talk about it? Call me.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Get it while you can. The little men, the Lilliputians, would like to take Michael Savage off the airwaves and make you listen to the people that no one wants to listen to. They want government control of the media. In the last hour, I had Attorney General Jerry Brown on the Savage Nation. I asked him about gay marriage, fairness doctrine, cutting off benefits to illegal aliens. I don't think I received a satisfactory answer, but I'm not going to use this time with the man not present to say anything negative about him. But I am going to say this. What I heard was a man who didn't know his facts very well. And this goes to the whole problem with politicians in general. The House passed Obama's bloated pork barrel spending bill with seven Dems defaulting. And we hear a Democrat saying not one member has read this bill. Actually, it was a Republican saying no one, not one member has read the entire bill. That, to me, explains the trouble we're in. The politicians are fundamentally actors, and they go whichever way the wind blows. Without really knowing what they're doing, they do it anyway. Without understanding there are consequences to their actions, they act anyway. And that's the problem we're having in this country today. That is why, for example, a country such as England, that was once one of the most tolerant nations on earth, has, through multiculturalism, become an intolerant nation. We are descending into the world of darkness. In Canada, a Muslim mob attacked a Jewish center at a Canadian university. As the writer said on the website, you see little Muslims walking around with headscarves holding up signs that say, Jews haven't learned, they need swastika more than ever before. This is passing before the eyes of people in Western nations. It's so weird how a country where multiculturalist tolerance is enforced via elaborate microfascism could slip into something that seems very much like a pogrom. Yes, that's exactly what's going on, because the politicians don't pay attention to the bills they're passing. So Nancy Pelosi, who looks dumber and crazier by the day, says, please pass, not please, she says, pass the bill, I'm rushing off to Rome. Democrats say that they're going to have the most open administration in history. They have the most closed in history. They won't release it until 11 o'clock last night so people can look at it. Then they release it on the website in a format citizens cannot search on their own computers. Nancy Pelosi is a total and absolute dictator. But I don't think she even knows what's in the bill other than paying back her contributors or her friends or the people in the party. She thinks it's all about Chicago-style politics right now. But I'd like to ask you what you think about Attorney General Jerry Brown's interview on the Savage Nation. I'd like you to answer what you think of him, his answers, and my handling of that interview. So I'm going to open it up to that for a few minutes on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. If you want to talk about the stories that I'm trying to get at, go to michaelsavage.com. There's astounding stories today. What a list. New York City, WOR. Ralph, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, the man you just had on is, I like him for some reason, and God knows, I don't even know why. Maybe he's spunky, maybe he's, ignorance is bliss, let's just say that. Although he's misled, I feel he's somewhat sincere. He doesn't draw
Let me tell you something. That's why I had Jerry Brown on the show. I've met Jerry Brown on three or four occasions at social events, and I rarely go out to begin with the social events. I like the man as a person in the few times I've met him. I don't know him that well. I also say that when he was there was a dinner when he was mayor of Oakland. He helped get funding for a military academy in Oakland, mainly for inner-city kids to attend military academy. And I said, look, that's a guy who at least understands reality. And I gave him a $5,000 donation. It was a few years ago. People didn't understand why I had done that. I am looking for a Democrat I can vote for because we only have Democrats running right now.
He's well-meaning, Michael.
If I could find a conservative Democrat, I'd consider voting for him.
He's well-meaning, Michael. He's a dinosaur. He's over the hill. He's locked into his doctrine. He feels beholden to certain types. I believe that. And he has a very panaceic view of things. But I don't know. There was always something. He chased Linda Ronstadt around for about 20 years. But he was always someone that I really felt that at least he came from the heart.
Okay. Not a bad guy. But I think he's wrong on gay marriage, the fairness doctrine, which he truly didn't understand. And the cutting off benefits to illegals, I thought that answer was not right. Thank you for the call. Anybody from California want to talk? Yes, Dominic in San Francisco on my home station of KNEW. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call, Michael. I quite enjoyed the interview with Mr. Brown, but I feel like he kind of missed the point about the whole argument surrounding Prop 8. And it may very well be that the courts affirmed a so-called right with their decision from a while ago when they overturned Prop 22 and everything. However, you know, with Jerry Brown even changing the text of Prop 8 to say this explicitly removes a right that the state constitution...
Well, this is too complicated for the average listener, Dominic. I don't think that he understood that he was saying he backs the judges, not the people. In other words, he's saying he sides with four judges, not with 40 million voters. See, I don't want that kind of personality running the state. Unfortunately, that's what we're going to get, either him or in the form of another far-left radical who doesn't respect the people's vote. And that's the problem there. Now, I have an interview segment ready on the Fairness Doctrine, which I'll play in the next segment, not right now. Sacramento, Connie, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I was really taken aback when Jerry Brown said that a little state control, he wouldn't mind a little state control. I think the liberals are getting a little too comfortable.
Yes, a little too cocky. He wouldn't mind a little state control over talk radio.
I thought you did a
I heard that. I heard it. He missed the point again entirely. The object of the media is to be the watchdog for the people, not a little state-controlled lapdog like NPR, or a little state-controlled lapdog like ABC, CBS, NBC, and unfortunately too much of Fox News today. We don't need a collar put around our neck by the government, or else the government will put a collar around the people's necks.
Exactly. But thank,
thank you for the call. Nobody could say it better than me. Nobody. But look, the man came on the show, and I give him credit for that. I doubt very much whether any of the other folks who want to be governor would come on this program. And that's all I can say. The biggest shame to me is that here we have a bankrupt state that won't cut off 1 cent in funding to illegal aliens who are not citizens. They would rather put your children's children's children into hock rather than cut off one penny in so-called benefits to people who haven't earned them and are not entitled to them. As far as I am concerned, they have it all backwards. That's my opinion. San Francisco, KNEW. Ted, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Your comment to, or your question to Jerry Brown. Look, I've been in California my whole life, and, you know, this guy, I was on talk, I was listening to talk radio as a kid before it was talk radio. My mom is a liberal to the core, and it was nothing back then. And that's the whole purpose of NPR, is to allow stupid, you know, commie talk, basically. But he never answered your question. Let me give you a little hint about. They're both part of the Catholic religious Franciscan order. I'm a Catholic. I grew up Catholic. And that tells you something about these guys.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Don't put him in the same category as a child pornography guy who's in prison. That's not fair.
As you like to say, he didn't answer your question. You asked him.
No. First of all, he was a Jesuit. He was raised as a Jesuit, not a Franciscan. And the Jesuits and Franciscans are, frankly, completely different in their viewpoints.
Right, but their minds...
Well, no, you just made a broad statement, which I'm sorry, I can't accept. You said he's the same as Bernie Ward, which I think is not right to even say that. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm asking you specifically about the so-called fairness doctrine. I'm sure you're aware of it. Bill Clinton came out yesterday and said he wants it enacted. Debbie Stabenow wants it enacted. Nancy Pelosi wants it enacted. They all want conservative voices constrained in the media. What side would you be on with the so-called fairness doctrine?
I would not I don't know exactly how the fairness doctrine would stop you from doing whatever you're doing. Maybe there's something that I don't know about what you're saying or what the fairness
doctrine... Well, the fairness doctrine is the constraint only on conservative talk radio. It would not apply to any other element of the media. It's aimed strictly at us in the minority in the media. And they want us controlled and constrained and removed from the airwaves. That's what they want. They only want to hear progressive voices that laud Obama and laud the liberal way. Now, you surely couldn't support that. I don't think so.
But I don't think that's a fair description of what's going on. It has a tinge of paranoia connected to it.
So you just said you don't know what it is, but now you're saying my position is paranoiac.
It has that tone, because who's trying to...
Well, you just said you don't know what it is, and now you're telling me that I'm sounding paranoid. First you say you don't know what the fairness doctrine is, then you accuse me of paranoia. That's what they used to do in the Soviet Union with dissidents, Jerry. They would accuse dissidents of being paranoiac and put them in mental hospitals.
Because you are speaking, and you're saying you're not allowed to speak, but you are speaking. How do you explain that? You're on the air.
Apparently there's a disconnect between what I just said and what you're hearing. I didn't say there is a fairness doctrine. I said to you that your cohorts in the liberal Democrat wing of the party want to constrain me through a so-called fairness doctrine.
Well, I think we need a robust range of opinions on the air, and you fit well within the range of robustness.
Well, I hope that when the time comes, if you have any power over that, you will respect what liberals used to always respect, which is opposite opinions, or else we will descend into absolute fascism. Because without dissent, there will be fascism in this country. And whether that dissent is left or right, I believe that a country that's supposedly free must have dissent.
Obviously, you need dissent, and you have dissent everywhere. I'm going to really look into this fairness doctrine, and I want to investigate, would it take you off the air? I want to hear that.
Well, you're making it more broad than it is. Of course it wouldn't take me off the air. It would take my opinions off the air, is what it would do.
Now, me,
you see, would it apply to NPR? Would NPR, which is all liberal all the time, have to have Michael Savage on or a conservative viewpoint? No, it wouldn't. It is aimed only at Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and in other words, the top five. There's something we're doing that must be right because they're all up in arms over us. I don't understand it with a party that has so much power, what kind of threat we are.
I think you're getting some pretty good ratings, some of those guys.
That's
Ooh. True. So for maybe better than NPR. But it's a different, look, they're different kind of people. People who listen to NPR probably don't want to listen to you. So, I mean, that's just the way the world is. There's different
I understand views. That, right? So they have a right to tune in what they want to listen to. That's exactly our defense, which is that we made it in radio because there's an audience for us. Because they can't find it on TV, they can't find it in most of the cable channels, but they can find it in AM radio where they run conservative talk. So that's why we say let the marketplace determine what people listen to, not the government. But I don't know exactly where you stand on that. You're starting to sound as though you want a little state control over the media.
Well, a little state control wouldn't hurt anybody.
Not a good statement. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. A little state control wouldn't hurt anybody. Yeah, a little state control wouldn't hurt anybody. I actually think a little state control would hurt a lot of bodies. I think a little state control leads to a lot of state control. And if you think the state doesn't have enough control over your life right now, well, go ahead and vote in for another progressive liberal Democrat, and you'll have a little more state control. Now, right now, the state control is in favor of super left-wing ideals. But what would happen if the state, at some point, when the people get fed up with this liberal insanity, put in a hard right leadership, and it's going to happen as sure as I'm sitting here, after Obama gets through wrecking the economy, and after Obama and his minions get through wrecking the freedoms that we enjoy, there's going to be a right-wing revolution at the ballot box. So I'd like to hear the speeches when the right wing suddenly wants a little state control. Let's see what happens from all the progressives then. I'll take your calls, though, at 1-800-449-8255. Los Angeles, KGIL country. Gary, thanks for listening. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was curious if you heard this. I hear it from liberals over and over that they consider a behavior a minority. So how is homosexuality a minority? And does that mean in the future pedophilia will be a minority? Vegans will be a minority? That's what I don't get.
Well, the argument that is fallacious is that the people need to be taught a lesson and constrained because they're evil, basically. And the people didn't want civil rights, and it was great Justice Marshall who forced the people to permit civil rights. Well, we all know that. But when I brought up the fact that 7 out of 10 blacks didn't want homosexual marriage, suddenly that argument went up in smoke, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. You couldn't defend that.
No, that's what I'm saying, because they're still using the doxy of, well, we're like the civil rights radical activists of the 60s, and we're just defending a poor, innocent minority called gays. They're just like the blacks of the 50s. It's a fallacious argument. It's a fallacious argument as sure as I'm sitting here. And when the counter-argument came up, which no one else had used till I used it, because I'm a very good rhetorician when I want to be and have to be, and a great debater when I want to be and have to be, there was no answer to that, was there? No, that's all. Play the bell right now, the Savage Nation bell. That's what I want to hear. Bong, the bong bell. Can you do the bong bell? Play the bell without the bong this time. Once. Let me hear the bell without the bong. Take off the bong. Take the bong out of here. Sacramento, Matt, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation. What do you have to say?
Very courageous of Jerry Brown. However, I have
yes.
a headache. My head against the window. As intelligent as he is, he doesn't seem to see the point. You know,
no, he doesn't get it. That's exactly right. There's an actual, like, cotton candy between what he is saying and the actual reality of what I was trying to ask him.
Criminals are in the minority. Should we support them, too?
Mm-hmm. Well, the illegal aliens are in the minority right now, or are they?
Exactly.
Actually, the biggest majority in California right now is the white, heterosexual, Christian male. That's the largest minority in the state of California. Politically, they're in the smallest minority in the state. Do you know that?
Exactly.
How come the state doesn't intervene to protect the rights of the white heterosexual Christian male? Can anyone explain that? That's the largest minority in the state right now, politically.
Savage.
Well, you either ought to have the fairness doctrine or we ought to have more balance on the other side, because essentially there's always been a lot of big money to support the right-wing talk shows, and let's face it, you know, Rush Limbaugh is fairly entertaining even when he's saying things that I think are ridiculous. I never minded having somebody be heard who disagreed with me, but if you only have one side like this blatant drumbeat against the stimulus program, this doesn't reflect the economic reality we're facing.
So in other words, did you hear what he just said? The blatant drumbeat against the stimulus is the reason they all want the fairness doctrine. Because we have the nerve to point out wasteful and non-stimulative spending in this bill. $2 billion earmarked for near-zero emissions power plant in Matteson, Illinois. Weatherizing windows, $10 million to fight Mexican gun runners. That has nothing to do with job creation. Did you know that there's something like $600 million in this for jobs for groups such as Acorn? Do you have any idea what that means? $100 million for lead paint hazard reduction? Nothing to do with jobs. It's straight, unadulterated pork barrel spending. So when it comes right down to it, the reason guys like Bill Clinton want the fairness doctrine to come back, so-called, is because they don't want anyone pointing out the excesses of government in this case. And I warn you so-called left-of-center people that you may be all for constraining Michael Savage today. There will be a right-wing reaction to what you people are doing to this country now and what Obama will be doing in the near future. When there's a right-wing sweep of the presidency, the Senate, and the House, and there will be in our lifetime, or your lifetime at least, tell me then you're going to want to hear about the fairness doctrine. I don't think so. You're going to want to have your say. You're going to want to have the minority opinion heard. You're going to want to be able to criticize the overbearing government at that time. And that's why you better be very, very careful as you sit there with glee saying that you want conservatives taken off the air. And make no mistake about it. Oh, they keep saying, well, we don't want you off the air. We just want balance. We just want a little fairness. That's rubbish. State control of what people say is not balance or fairness. It is state control, period. $100 million, $10 million for urban canals. They don't like the drumbeat against the stimulus program because they don't like us pointing out the money that's going into the pockets of people like lobbyists. They don't like us pointing out the money they're making through these slush funds. Don't you get it? It has nothing to do with fairness. It has to do with covering up the big crime they're committing. $100 million for constructing U.S. Marshals office building. $300 million for constructing the FBI office buildings. Now, I like the FBI. I like the U.S. Marshals. I like the Homeland Security Department. But these construction projects have nothing to do with jobs creation, do they? They have to do with construction projects. And so, therefore, if we point that out and say this is pork barrel spending, this is an omnibus liberal spending bill of the 1960s kind that would have taken 2 years to pass, that Obama just jammed down the throats of the American people. We're doing the people's business. We're not the blatant drumbeat against the stimulus program. We're the blatant drumbeat against lobbyists. We're the blatant drumbeat against fraudulent contractors. And Bill Clinton should know that, of course, and he does. San Diego, welcome to the Savage. Now, let's move around the country. Hawaii, Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I found the conversation with Jerry Brown to be absolutely chilling, and I got three things out of it. One, the voting public cannot be trusted. He would vote yes on the fairness doctrine, and illegals have parity with citizens. That's I found great clarity in what he was
saying. You're 100% right. That's right. As nice a guy as he might be, that's what he said.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. No, I heard that too. I mean, the take-home message is very clear. And it's terrifying to believe that these people who would lead the state would lead us into further state control and further bankruptcy. and also further control with the tyranny of the minority. The tyranny of the gay lobby would become, frankly, out of control. Right now, we're all sitting here, and we don't know how to deal with the tyranny of the gay lobby. Next phase, it's going to even be worse, much worse, and it's very sad. Let me give you an example of what's going on with violent leftists in America. There was an anti-Hamas rally held at San Francisco State University by college Republicans. Listen to what I just said. College Republicans try to point out that the violence, by and large, domestic, were out of control at the rally. Listen to clips 8 and 9.
We want to listen to what's actually going on. Move over here.
Come on, guys.
Brother, in the back. You think you're going to get anything at talking with KKK racists who like killing people? No.
I see like three police running on, up on campus. Why? To protect somebody that's ignorant? To protect people that like promote hate?
You hear the Hamas supporter saying he couldn't understand why the police were protecting college Republicans. They're ignorant and they promote hate. Listen to clip 10.
So their rhetoric is this is a war on Hamas. Let's think of it realistically. We know this is a war on innocent civilians.
See, now if I was running the FBI, she'd be in custody. That's all there is to it. Any fellow traveler of Hamas is a domestic terrorist. They'd be in custody. That's not a minority opinion. That's 1938. The Nazis are holding a rally, and they're saying that they're in support of Adolf Hitler. That Hitler is a good man. Hitler is a good man. Anyone who stands up and points out the evils of Hitler is a hater and a KKK member. The FBI should round them up and question them. Why are they in this country? How are they in this country? Who put them in this country? Who is their family? This is what passes for college today. This is what's on a college. And if you think I'm making this up, listen to clips 12 and 13.
Intifada! Intifada!
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine! Intifada! Intifada!
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
There are the peace-loving... There are the peace-loving Palestinian Hamasniks in San Francisco claiming that they're only protecting the Hamasniks. It's unbelievable to me what's going on in this country, but it's the 1930s all over again. And the dividing line is very clear. And at some point, you're going to have to make your decision which side you're on this issue and every other issue. The barricades are going up around America, and you're going to have to fight. You're not going to be able to sit on the sidelines. Obama is a neo-Marxist. If he walks like a neo-Marxist, if it walks like a neo-Marxist, talks like a neo-Marxist, and acts like a neo-Marxist, it is a neo-Marxist. And remember what I just said. I coined that phrase this week. They are neo-Marxists. They're running this country. And if you think they're finished because they just got their way with a $1 trillion pork barrel spending bill, you are mistaken. They've only just begun to dig their heels in. They're going to go after the fundamental freedoms of this country as sure as I'm standing here. They're going to go after speech. They're going to go after what you can say, who you can listen to. And if you think that's paranoid, wait and see. It's not paranoia. It's reality with Obama, the accidental president. San Antonio, Judy, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Kudos on your interviewing style with Jerry Brown. And you're right, I think he's going to march lockstep with everyone else who's following Obama. I don't believe it took any chutzpah or any courage for him to call your show. You said yourself that all politicians are actors, and he was political posturing. He knew what.
I did think it took courage for him to come on the show because Gavin Newsom wouldn't come on the show. This woman, this babe who ran a company into the ground won't come on the show. None of the other would-be Democrats will come on the show. I think it was brave of him to come on the show, frankly.
No, he's been around since AIR. He knew he could get on the show, and he knew it'd make him look good with your audience.
Well, I don't know that it made him look good. He came out saying that he's in favor of gay marriage. He favors state control over speech, and that he's not for cutting off benefits to illegal aliens. So I don't know how much favor he won.
Political posturing is all it was, Michael. I disagree. And to use the word fairness when you're talking to a politician and words like fairness, doctrine, talking to a politician is a massive oxymoron. There's nothing mm-hmm. fairness when it comes to politicians. I just don't trust any of them. And Jerry Brown, like I say, he's been around since AIR, and he knows exactly what to say and when to say, and I think he knows more about what's going on than he lets on. Thanks.
Okay, fair enough. I'm glad you listened that carefully. 1-800-449-8255, Victorville. Victorville. Bill, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. It is an absolute total honor to be able to talk to you. And I
thank
hope
you
and
so
pray
much.
To God, I hope and pray to God that the communists are never able to get you off the air. You asked what I thought of how you handled that interview with Jerry Brown. I thought you were absolutely spot on. You were polite. You were honorable. You were above reproach. You handled it spectacularly. I couldn't have asked for anything
well,
more.
You know what? I aimed to do that, and it was a tightrope I had to walk, to be very honest with you, because I disagreed with him on everything.
You walked the high road. You took the high road, and I appreciate that. Second of all, you asked us what we think of Jerry Brown. Well, I'll tell you. I'm a California resident. I didn't vote for him, and I think he's one of the biggest crooks that this state has ever had. And I want to ask you, because you know, and I need this from you, I believe he was the one that figured out how to rob the money from that was separated from the general fund that belonged to the California Department of Fish and Game, which the monies from Fish and Game...
I can't answer that, Bill. I just don't know anything about it. But I want to say something about integrity and honesty, and I have to say this. Of all the politicians I've read about or met, he's actually very frugal. The man doesn't live a high lifestyle. The man lives the lifestyle almost that's almost monk-like in a way. He doesn't spend a lot of money. He doesn't drive a big car. He's the last person who I would accuse of aggrandizing himself with money. And that's not to say I like his politics. I don't. But he's not a dishonest politician when it comes to monetary affairs in that regard. So I can't answer your question. San Francisco, KNEW. David, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Michael. I just wanted to say Jerry Brown wants to side with judges, but you've been in California long enough to remember that he appointed Rose Byrd to the California Supreme Court along with a couple others. And frankly, I think she did a lot of damage to this state.
Absolutely. So, look, Jerry Brown is a lifetime far-left progressive leftist liberal. But, you know, at the end of the interview, David, I said, how do you distinguish yourself from Gavin Newsom, should you run? It was very interesting. He gave me a campaign slogan, and he said, I want to go back to traditional values, the values that built California. Boy, did he step in it when I said the gays didn't build California, did they? How are you going to support traditional values by supporting gay marriage? I mean, you know, that was campaign rhetoric that just didn't fly in the face of what we had been talking about minutes before, did it?
No. And if it means appointing people like Rose Byrd to the courts, my gosh, we're in trouble. So
you're not kidding. You are not kidding. And to say that the votes of four whack job, far left, bought and sold judges should have more power than 40 million voters is chilling, to be frank. Chilling to think that four whack job, to me, they're no different than the Ku Klux Klan. They're only on the left. Those four leftist judges in our California State Supreme Court are no different than the Ku Klux Klan in their extreme. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place, such a lovely place, such a lovely place.
Time is so short right now. I have a lot of callers I want to get to, and many of you are calling about the interview. Most of you are calling also about the so-called job stimulus bill, and I want to get calls on that as well. Because it is not a job stimulus bill. Even Obama changed his rhetoric, calling it a saving of jobs and not a job creation bill. So we're going to talk about that as well. Victorville, Ken, go ahead, please.
Michael, you just made history. In the span of a few minutes, you just demonstrated why liberals will not come on your program.
Why?
This man just revealed himself. He just revealed exactly what they have planned for us. In just a few minutes, and it gives me chills.
Well, you're saying they won't come on this show because they are exposed, their policies are exposed, and they're opened up to daylight for the people to make a decision. The same way Nancy Pelosi hid the stimulus bill, so-called, from the general public because she knew that the more they saw it, the more they knew it was fraud.
I'm convinced that they will not come on your program because it reveals exactly what they have in store for us.
All right, my friend, I'm glad you enjoyed that interview. Let's go to New York City, WOR on Obama's boondoggle. Andrew, welcome to the program from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor to speak with you. I just have a really quick point. You go down line by line with the stimulus bill, and you say, well, this won't create a job. Well, this won't create a job. Well, I have to disagree. I mean, constructing buildings for the FBI and rising homes, these are the exact things that will be creating jobs.
All right, fair enough. Then why? Well, I'm going to go down the list and show you that it's not true. First of all, you must know that some of these things, such as $160 million for volunteers at the Corporation for National and Community Service, what kind of a job is a volunteer?
I can't defend those. But the other
one...
Okay,
wait a minute. There's another one. If you're talking about creating 3 million jobs, which is, I think, much too high, because Obama then said saving or creating. Let's say it's 3 million jobs. I'm going to be very liberal here. Pardon me. And the bill costs $900 billion. Do the math. That's $600,000 per job. Do you think that's a good investment?
I think it's a good investment if it is creating those jobs that...
Did you hear what I just said? You're spending $600,000 of taxpayer money to create a single job. Where does that money come from?
Where else are those jobs coming from?
So you think it's fine to spend $600,000 for a $50,000 a year job?
I think it's horrendous.
Oh, well, then you just agreed with me. So it's not just the bill per se, it's the fat in the bill. No one's against creating jobs. We all want jobs created. But at what cost is the issue, Andrew?
The things like the community...
This shows you what government... This shows you the inefficiencies of government, does it not, Andrew? You know, if I run a business, and I know something about business, trust me, I wouldn't spend $600,000 to create a $50,000 a year job, Andrew. I'd be out of business before I started.
Granted.
But that's the problem with government getting into the jobs business. Thank you. See, you're not thinking this through. You're not thinking this through. Private industry does it more efficiently. Moreover, there's another element. One lone senator, late at night on Wednesday, tried to pass an amendment which would have made sure that any job that was created, any construction job, that is, would have employed only American citizens. Now, you listening to me out there who are construction workers, electricians, plumbers, carpenters, pipe fitters, listen to me. You're an American union worker, you're not protected. Your friends in the Democrat Party would not even vote on the amendment that would have provided you with a job. They are saying, we don't care if it goes to an illegal alien. We don't care if an American worker starves to death. That's what your friends in the Democrat Party just did. Jeff Sessions, Republican, to his credit, tried to get that in. They wouldn't even vote on it. Nancy Pelosi was dashing off to Rome to kiss the Pope's ring. So don't go along with the malarkey that they care about the worker. How about the Buy American clause? Made sense to me. I've always liked Buy American clauses. Who killed it? Who killed it? John McCain and his Democrat cronies who were interested in free trade at all costs. Free trade uber alles. That's why John McCain deserves to be where he is in the ash heap of history. John McCain was thrown out with yesterday's trash because, frankly, he showed us with that one single vote where his loyalties lie, and they're certainly not with the American worker. Oh, I heard all the rubbish about if we start getting into trade protectionism, there'll be a trade war. There is a trade war, only we're not involved in it. We're losing it. Every other country, frankly, has barriers against our products. You try to export something to a foreign country. I know an awful lot about exporting to foreign countries, and I'm not going to spell it out. You try to get your American product into a foreign country. You see what it's like to send products into the EU or into Mexico or into Japan or into Asia. You see what it's like. And you'll see there is a trade war, only we're losing it because we have sellout politicians who are in the pocket of the foreign industries like John McCain and the Democrats. So again, as I say to you in closing this discussion, the jobs, they're not all jobs. And at what cost, my friends? Ask yourself the essential question. Even if it's 3 million jobs, which I doubt, at 900 million, that's 600,000 a job. Do the math. That's government at work. Inefficient. The private sector creates jobs, not the government. If the government does it, it's done at such an excess with such losses that it's a net loss to the nation. This is the Savage Nation. Thanks for listening.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation, and here's what I've been talking about today. Number one, Obama's Pyrrhic victory, Jerry Brown and the deranged face of Madam Pelosi. Number one, Obama's Pyrrhic victory. Now that the stimulus has passed, so-called stimulus, okay, it's a boondoggle. Every liberal reporter in the media is trumpeting it as a big victory for BAM, for Obama. It is not a big victory. It's been a Pyrrhic victory. A Pyrrhic victory is one that costs more than it's worth. King Pyrrhus defeated the Roman army in 279 BC, but took so many casualties that the victory was meaningless. In the same way, Obama has expended so much political capital, wrung so many concessions from congressmen, called in so many favors from the press, bombarded us with so many speeches, that the next time he comes to the country, the people, and demands something, the people will get tired of his voice. This was supposed to be an easy victory for the new Messiah. Instead, he has worn out his welcome and exposed his true self, a big liberal neo-Marxist spender. Next topic was Jerry Brown. Earlier in this show, you heard me interview former California Governor Jerry Brown, who is now the Attorney General, and he wants to be governor again. You heard me ask him why he refuses to enforce the will of the people of California who voted against gay marriage. Do you believe the man you heard in this program today deserves to be the governor of California again? Finally, Pelosi. Is there anyone out there? Did anyone see her face and hear her voice as she announced this victory?
On this vote, the yeas are 246. The nays are 183. The conference and one voting present. The conference report is adopted. Without objection, a motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
Is this the face of a rational Speaker of the House? On to other topics. Obama is marching towards socialism as if his stimulus plans and plans of socializing the banking system and health care aren't bad enough. His lack of foreign policy experience may cause problems that we will be facing for generations. Jeff Kuhner with the Washington Times joins us with a report on how our two green president shows signs of weakness and may be strengthening old enemies.
Thanks, Michael. This week, I want to talk about my latest column in the Washington Times. It's entitled Balkan Basket Case. The column focuses on an area of the world that I think is gaining in importance and that every one of your listeners should pay attention to. What you are now seeing across the Balkans is the growing tide of the financial crisis is now claiming governments all across Europe. From Latvia to Iceland, you are seeing popular revolts, people coming to the streets, protesting not only the high unemployment, but the fact that their governments are on the verge of bankruptcy and that people's money has been misspent in all kinds of government boondoggles and bailing out failing banks and corporations. You are now seeing the very same thing happen in, of all places, Croatia. Now, what your listeners may not realize is that Croatia is in many ways the strategic linchpin of the Balkans. It is a former republic of Yugoslavia. It was considered the most western of all the republics in the former Yugoslavia. Yet for the last 5 years, it has been overtaken by a gangster by the name of Prime Minister Sanader. This man has turned Croatia into a mafia state. Journalists are being murdered. They are being physically intimidated. The media has now come under complete control by the government. And Michael, most ominously, this government is now starting to make alliances with the likes of Vladimir Putin. And what concerns me the most, Michael, is that as America has become weakened, as we see ourselves mired in an economic crisis, as we see Obama now kowtowing to Iran, China, Hamas, and to our Islamic fascist enemies, Russia under Vladimir Putin is taking advantage of this, and slowly but surely, the Russians are flexing their muscles. They are now dominating parts of Georgia. They have turned the breakaway Republic of Abkhazia into a Russian satellite. They are cutting off gas imports into Europe. They are putting the squeeze on Belarus and on Ukraine. They are now threatening Poland. More ominously, Michael, Vladimir Putin is not just murdering dissidents in Russia. He is now corrupting governments across Europe. He has taken the likes of former Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder. He was somebody who was very prominent in Germany throughout the 1990s, a staunch anti-American. He has bought him off by giving him a very lucrative position on a board of a Russian gas company. And now Putin is spreading his tentacles into the Balkans, Belgrade in Serbia, Sarajevo and in Bosnia, and now into Croatia. And the Croatian government is now cutting sweetheart energy deals with the Russian government. And they are now actively bribing and paying off key members of the Croatian government. Now, people in Idaho or Wyoming may be saying, who cares about Croatia? Who cares about the Balkans? How does this affect America? Here's how it affects America. In April, they will be formally asked to join NATO. Once they become part of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, not only will they be part of the greatest Western military alliance in the history of the world, but they will be privy to many of the military secrets that NATO has, in particular, that America has. And if Croatian government officials are completely corruptible, if they're all on the take, then they were willing to be bought off by the Russians, and they will be willing to sell sensitive American military secrets to the Russians. In fact, the Russians have already done this with Germany. They have now spread their money across all the political classes in Germany. It's not just Gerhard Schroeder. And so what you're seeing in Germany, inch by inch, day by day, year by year, is Germany is becoming more and more of an anti-American country. It is now opposed to tough sanctions against Iran, exactly what the Russians want. And so, Michael, the growing danger is that Putin's fascist state, his KGB cronies, are slowly buying influence all across Europe. And it is slowly going to turn European governments against the United States and in favor of Moscow. As we get weaker, Russia gets stronger. And Michael, here is the mother of all points that I want to stress. In the face of this economic tidal wave that is now overcoming most of the world, we are seeing a replay of the 1930s, where governments became so corrupt, where they so economically mismanaged their budgets, their treasuries, that literally governments began to collapse. In Latvia, the government's on the verge of collapse. In Iceland, the government's already collapsed. Estonia, Croatia, Serbia. One by one, all of these governments are facing bankruptcy. Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of Britain, has come out and said that maybe even Britain, the great England, the country that oversaw an empire that apparently the sun never set on that empire, that's how great Britain used to be, is now facing bankruptcy. And here in America, we are replicating the failed policies that have destroyed economy after economy, country after country. We are on the verge, Michael, of no longer being the United States of America, but we are on the verge of becoming the United States of Argentina. And what I want to stress to you, Michael, is this. Before I became a journalist, I was a professor. I taught history at McGill. And when I taught history at McGill, I always made this example to my students because it shocked them. I said, what many of you don't realize is that in the 1920s and the 1930s, Argentina was one of the five most wealthiest countries in the world. It was a model of economic prosperity and development, not just in South America, but around the world. And within 15 years, they were taken over by a fascist thug by the name of Juan Perón and his wife, Eva Perón. He was seen as a political messiah. The press corps gave him a free pass on everything. They cheerleaded his entire economic program. He spent billions of dollars on government programs, on public works, on growing the size of government. He began to slowly tax the people to death. And inch by inch, Argentina went from one of the most prosperous countries in the world to one of the most bankrupt countries in the world. This is exactly what is happening now in America. Right in front of our eyes, we have now proclaimed our own political messiah, Barack Obama. We have a cheerleading and sycophantic press corps that gives him pass after pass after pass. Nobody is holding him accountable. We have a first lady that is now glamorized as a fashion diva, as somebody who can do no wrong, who is slowly becoming, as Eva Perón, the conscience of the United States. And in front of our very eyes, we now see the unghastly sight of Congress, led by Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, put together an $800 billion spending package, a supposed stimulus bill that will stimulate nothing but the growth and size of government. We will see a $1 trillion deficit this year and another trillion, maybe even $1.5 trillion deficit next year. On top of these massive spending programs, we will see government-run health care. And sooner or later, we will see the fairness doctrine imposed to silence the last bastion of free media in this country, talk radio. This is all happening right in front of our eyes. And instead of standing up to him, they stand silent. They throw him one soft ball after another. They allow him to go on and on as the dear leader, guiding us out of our supposed economic misery. Our Messiah, our Moses, who will come and part the waters and lead us to a utopia and to the land of milk and honey. Well, Michael, I have news for these people in the press corps. They are in for a rude awakening. They will see that Barack Obama will take us down the path that we are seeing all across Europe. Because the problem with big government liberalism, the problem with these massive spending programs, the problem with the welfare state is not only that it cripples economic initiative, that it steals individual freedom, and that it slowly saps the will of a free people. But above all, it is economically unsustainable. It destroyed Argentina. It is destroying Croatia. It is destroying Latvia. It is destroying Iceland. It now has Britain and Ireland on the ropes, and it will eventually bring even this great republic to its knees. Because in the end, you cannot afford a public pension system. You cannot afford unemployment insurance. You cannot afford government health care. You cannot afford one government entitlement program after another. Because in the end, somebody has to pay for the bill. And when the bill comes due, it comes in the form of crushing taxes. And when you start levying crushing taxes, as the Democrats will, then you will destroy economic growth and you will destroy the backbone of this country, which is business, especially small business. We are sleepwalking into becoming another Argentina. And this is why our motto as conservatives should be, don't cry for me, Argentina, because we should stand as proud Americans and we should say, no, we've gone down that road before. It is the road to serfdom. It is the road to economic ruin, and it is the road to economic collapse. And we as conservatives will stand tall and we will say, not here, not in America, not in the greatest country in the history of the world. I'm Jeff Kooner at the Washington Times with a special weekly report to the Savage Nation. Back to you, Michael.
Thanks, Jeff. Although the media has seemed to have forgotten about Putin and his attempts to revive the Soviet Union, this is something Obama can't ignore. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. Savage. Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com, America's favorite little website, MichaelSavage.com. Well, of course, the big news is Obama's Pyrrhic victory. The liberal press is calling it a giant victory for a giant victory for the president. It's not true. It was a Pyrrhic victory. That's a victory that costs more than it's worth. Other stories include a big one. The 30s are back. The Nazis are back, only this time they're wearing headscarves. A Muslim mob attacked a Jewish center at a Canadian university, carrying signs saying Jews haven't learned they need Hitler more than ever before. It's so weird how a country where multiculturalist tolerance is enforced via elaborate microfascism could slip into something that seems very much like a pogrom. Read the article. House okays pork barrel bill as Nancy Pelosi rushes off to the Pope. 13-year-old father was allowed to share bed with girlfriend, 14. Did you hear this one? In merry old England? A 13-year-old has a baby, a boy. When asked how he would cope financially, Alfie, the 13-year-old so-called father, replied, "What's financially?" Founder of U.S. Muslim TV charged with beheading wife, Orchard Park, New York. Police are investigating a gruesome killing, the beheading of a woman, after her husband, an influential member of the local Muslim community, reported her death. He's been charged with beheading her. Hey, it's the religion of peace. We know that. Another Democrat weasel calls for the fairness doctrine. Shall I go down on michaelsavage.com? Because there's plenty of more. Plenty more where this came from. Vatican buries the hatchet with Charles Darwin. Fabulous story that you shouldn't miss. And then, of course, there's this one for those of you who love multiculturalism. The illegals from Mexico are bringing their culture to the United States. Kidnapping. More ransom kidnappings occur in Arizona than in any other state in America. Thank you very much. There are other stories. The Vatican buries the hatchet with Charles Darwin. That should get you primitivists excited. The Vatican says Charles Darwin was on the right track when he claimed that man descended from the apes. I know this is a hot-button topic, but I've covered it. You see, evolution is compatible with the existence of God. It's not either or, it's both and. I've covered this before. The fact of the matter is, you can believe in God and the theory of evolution at the same time, and I covered this on the show. They're not incompatible with each other. It's not like they're wrong and I'm right and they're wrong. How does that work? How can you believe in the origin of the species and the descent of man and believe in God? How can you believe in both? Because I once covered this. I had a brilliant caller who explained it from a rabbinic point of view, although it's not in the Bible, that man came late in the history of the earth. In other words, when you see the Miocene, the Pliocene, you know, the Paleolithic and whatever, and you see the dinosaurs millions of years ago, you say, well, how could that be compatible? We weren't here, and many of you believe God put man here at the same time as all the animals. What it is that man, God was experimenting with this planet called Earth. He was shaping things and changing things, and then he let the experiment develop. And he tried the ape, then he tried the Neanderthal, and he didn't like what he created, so he permitted evolution to occur, or evolution was set up to occur, so that man then evolved, and here we are.
Savage.
The rising tide of liberal intolerance. Across the world, the tide of darkness is rising. In addition to the socialists who want to impose censorship, in addition to all the Islamo-fascists who will not tolerate criticism of them, the tide of Marxism and leftism and hatred and evil is rising everywhere across the world. In Canada, the Islamo-fascists attacked the Jewish Center at Toronto University, waving a swastika saying they need Hitler again. And how did the police of Toronto respond? By shutting down the Jewish Center. Muslims were in the street carrying swastikas, wearing headscarves, covering their faces. Yet the police shut down the Jewish Center. It was a mini Canadian Kristallnacht. At San Francisco State University, peaceful protests against the Hamas terrorists held by college Republicans was violently disturbed by more Islamo-fascist protesters. They screamed for violence. They screamed for intifada. They hurled epithets. In Washington, D.C., the hatred is rising as well. The leftists who are feeling their power think they can get away with anything. Bonnie Frank opens a hearing attended by CEOs of major companies and cows them into submission. Cows them into submission. Cows them into submission. A little bully boy who never had power is now wielding the power of the state. Nancy Pelosi imperially insists that the stimulus bill be passed before she rushes off to a trip to Rome. Obama snaps at any reporter who doesn't agree with him, like a snapping turtle. And even on the Savage Nation, more socialists are calling than ever before. It feels like the chaos of the 1930s, when both communism and fascism were on the rise, when the corrupt and decadent ancient power structure had failed to provide any answers and the world lurched toward extremism. In the 1930s, first came the breadlines, then came the riots, then came the camps, and then came the wars. Will this be repeated in the 21st century? God only knows. But what we do know is this. No good can come from a society in which a few loud, violent extremists are allowed to crush dissent and silence the opinions of others. In the U.S. of A., the calls for censorship are growing louder. The Beast from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow, has declared that she wants hearings on radio fairness. Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa has declared we've got to get the fairness doctrine pushed through. I want you to listen again to the screeching voices of these members of the Pickwickian Senate.
I think it's absolutely time to pass a standard. Now, whether it's called the fairness standard, whether it's called something else, I absolutely think it's time to be bringing accountability to the airwaves.
I read your op-ed in the Washington Post today. I ripped it out. I took it to my office. I said, there you go. We've got to get the fairness doctrine back in law again.
And more recently, that prize of humanity, former President Bill Clinton, has declared that we should have the fairness doctrine as well. Now let's listen to Slippery Bill.
Well, you either ought to have the fairness doctrine or we ought to have more balance on the other side. Because essentially, there's always been a lot of big money to support the right-wing talk shows. And let's face it, you know, Rush Limbaugh is fairly entertaining, even when he's saying things that I think are ridiculous.
The old voice of insanity. Here's a chorus of crazed liberals across the land screaming for the censorship of conservative talk radio. But the danger isn't only in the United States. The Dutch politician Geert Wilders, who dares to talk about the dangers of the Islamofascists, both in his own country and abroad, was kicked out of the UK when he tried to visit there just the other day. Why was this? Because a single unelected member of parliament, Lord Ahmed, declared that he would be a security threat. He too, it seems, that is Mr. Wilders, has been a victim of censorship in the land of the Magna Carta. He is not a threat. The real threat is whether it comes in the form of liberals or Islamofascists or anyone who would destroy our freedom of speech, anyone who would rob us of our only means of alerting the public to the dangers which we face. Geert Wilders is the victim of a fairness doctrine which has been imposed in Great Britain. If you let Tom Darkins and the Debbie Stabenowbacks and the Bill Clintons win here, then they will impose the same iron heel of control in this country as they did in England. They may not be willing to deport millions of illegal aliens, but they want to deport Michael Savage and others from the radio. Would you put it past Harkin or Stabenow or Clinton to deport conservative talk radio hosts from the airwaves? Would you put it past them to remove anyone they consider to have uttered hate speech from the country removed? Would you put it past them to clamp down on all dissent? You're living on the brink of liberal fascism. This is the Savage Nation. Watching the trash that comes out of leftist Hollywood nowadays can be pretty painful. I can't sit through the first 5 minutes of some of these films. James Herson from Newsmax is joining us today for his report on Hollywood and possible upcoming releases.
Thanks, Michael. It just might be coming soon to your local multiplex. Some screenwriters who've been nominated for Oscars this year and have an interest in politics would like to write a story about Sarah Palin. Yeah, this guy, Dustin Lance Black, who wrote Milk, you know, Sean Penn's Oscar vehicle, one of your favorites, is intrigued with the idea of making a film about Sarah Palin's VP candidacy. But don't expect it to be flattering. Here's what the guy said. Black said, I'm always down for politics is humor. In other words, he's going to cast someone like Tina Fey for the lead role. And Sarah Palin's kids aren't off limits for these guys either. Tom McCarthy, a writer for the Oscar-nominated film The Visitor, wants to focus on Governor Palin's future stepson, Levi Johnston. He's really excited. He says this young man gets his girlfriend pregnant, ends up on the Republican platform at the National Convention, and he sees a dark comedy in there. So once again, for these folks, conservatives are a joke. And Eric Roth, the guy who's been nominated for an Oscar for his Forrest Gump in Reverse, Benjamin Button, says he wants to do a screenplay about the great relationship drama of our time. So who would that be? Brad and Angelina? Tom and Katie? Will and Jada? No, of course, the great relationship drama of our time is Bill and Hillary.
Oh, my God.
Well, to attract an audience, Roth may have to have them age, dance, and sniffle in reverse. And no place in the world applauds itself as loudly as Hollywood does. There's an award ceremony. It's just about every other week, right? We've got the Oscars coming. We had the Globes. We've got the Emmys coming. Just had the Grammys. Those are the biggies. But think of all the other ones where entertainers heap praise on themselves. SAG Awards, WGA Awards, DGA Awards, American Music Awards, Billboard Awards, and, well, there's too many self-idolizing events to mention. And not content to just make their political speeches when they get an acceptance speech, these Tinseltowners are now finding ways to acknowledge politicians for their distinction in lefty entertainment. Now, I'm a voting member of the National Association of Recording Arts and Sciences, NARIS, and I've had to watch in disgust as the Grammy Awards dole out these statues to politicians just for being good little liberals. And since most politicians can't play musical instruments, can't sing, they give them awards for their politics with the Best Spoken Word Album Trophy. So, you know, following the release of a written book, an author creates an audio version. And audiobooks of liberal authors get the Hollywood attention. I mean, just take a look at the list of political Grammy winners in this category. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Al Franken, Jimmy Carter, Al Gore, and of course, Barack Obama. Hillary won the award back in 1997 for the audiobook of It Takes a Village. By the way, the Grammy voters didn't seem to care that the book was ghostwritten, and Bill Clinton was the first president of the United States to ever win a Grammy. He won in 2004 for narrating a title called Wolf Track. And Wolf Track was a left-wing description of the transformation of a scary wolf to an environmentally conscious creature that sought to protect nature.
Oh, my God.
You know, he got a second Grammy in 2005 for the autobiographical Snorer. I don't know how he stayed awake reading it, called My Life. It was more than 1,000 pages. And Jimmy Carter won for reading his book. The title was Our Endangered Value. Carter also was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002, and he was on his way to picking up another Grammy in 2008, but he lost out to this newcomer, Barack Obama, for his reading of The Audacity of Hope. By the way, Obama also won in 2006 for Dreams from My Father. And Al Franken got the award in 1997 and 2003 for basically what amounted to conservative name-calling. Now, the ex-vice president and environmental con artist, Al Gore, got the award trifecta. He got it for this, you know, globaloney. An Inconvenient Truth won an Academy Award for Best Documentary. Now, technically, it wasn't awarded. It was awarded to the producer, but Gore was the one who made the acceptance speech. He then was honored with a 2007 Nobel Peace Prize. And this year at the Grammys, we had to see another one of these spoken word album trophies given to Gore for reading the book about the documentary. The guy gets a Grammy.
Come on.
Now look, with these winners only coming from one side of the political spectrum only, did it have any credibility left? I think it's like an old film title. What was it called? Less than zero. Well, that's the load coming from Hollywood. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, James. Sooner or later, the shameless self-promoting leftists in Hollywood will have to wake up and start making films that the country can believe in and attend again. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Regular listeners to this show know that I care about issues concerning the conservation of animals. From time to time, an issue will come up that I think is important to look at. One of these issues right now is in Africa, and it has to deal with elephants being poisoned, maimed, and killed for their tusks. With us today is A.J. Cady, the Deputy Director of Programs with the International Fund for Animal Welfare. A.J. Cady, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Please give us some background of your organization.
IFAW, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, we're an animal welfare and conservation organization. And really what we do that I think makes us special is that we work to protect both wild and domestic animals, but really also with a focus on finding solutions to problems that help animals and people at the same time. We've got projects in over 40 countries worldwide. About 1.2 million people help us out with the work that we do. And in our elephant work in particular, we cover two continents with it, both Africa and Asia, in our efforts to help those animals.
What in the world is going on with these elephants in Africa?
We're really excited about this because there's been a huge problem in a country called Malawi, which is one of the poorest nations on Earth in southern Africa. And what's been happening there is there's a family of about 65 elephants that a few years back moved into a new area because of some drought. And there's just been huge problems because what we've had happening are conflicts between these elephants and the local people because the elephants are going into areas where there are crops, and then the villagers are attacking the elephants because they're trying to, you know, defend their crops. It's a situation that no one wants to happen, but the tragedy here is that people are being killed because of these conflicts, and also a lot of the elephants are being killed or really badly wounded. And so what IFA has said is that we're going to step in and help pull together an effort to move these animals, because we've made an agreement where we can relocate them to a new wildlife reserve. And so it could be a real win-win for everyone, where it solves a problem for the local villagers, but rather than having all these beautiful endangered animals be killed, we can use them to repopulate in another park where the elephants have been wiped out by poaching. So really, it's an incredible project. The only challenge now is we've got to raise the money for it because the price tag is about $2,500 for each elephant that we want to move.
Is the loss of habitat a worldwide problem or just this region of Africa?
The loss of elephant habitat, safe places for these animals to live, is really becoming the major challenge that we're facing. We've got huge problems with ivory poaching, but in addition to that, just because of human population growth, these animals really have no place safe to live. At the moment, protected areas only account for only 16% of the African elephant range space that's left. So a lot of these animals are in areas where they're in danger, and at the same time, people end up in danger as well. So the real challenge now is we've got to preserve what little pristine habitat remains. We've got to protect that and hopefully restore even more.
Wasn't there an international ban on the ivory trade?
Well, it was banned, but the thing that people don't know about, same as with the habitat laws, is that this trade is happening again. What's gone on is just recently, last fall, there was a deal made where several countries were allowed to sell their ivory stockpiles, ivory that had been pulled together over the years from seizures and things like that. And the problem with that is that we know from 30 years of just bitter experience that whenever you have any kind of legal trade in something like elephant ivory, it opens the door for massive ivory poaching, for killing of elephants.
Worldwide, are things getting better or worse for the elephants?
I wish I could say things are getting better, but they're getting worse. An estimated 20,000 elephants are still being killed a year for things like the illegal ivory trade. Loss of habitat is still a huge threat. There's so many challenges that these animals are facing that if we don't act swiftly, we could very easily see a situation where elephants are wiped out in many areas and really only exist in a very, very few parks in all of Africa and all of India. People have done so much to campaign to save them. But just having them listed on the Endangered Species Act isn't enough. We need to be politically active. And to be honest, right now we need funds to keep these things going. The economic crisis is hitting nonprofits very, very hard. And where in past years we would have been able to raise funds for these types of rescues, not easily, but that we'd be able to do it. I'm excited about the Malawi rescue because I think that IFAW is in the perfect organization. We're working with the government officials. Everyone wants to save these elephants. The will's there. It's just a matter of coming up with the money. And I've got faith in the American people that we'll be able to get the cash together that we need. I mean, $2,500 per elephant, it's a lot of money, but it isn't all that much if we get enough people to chip in. So I think we'll be able to move them. We've got the expertise. We've done it before. And I think that a couple months from now, we'll be looking at a really good news story where the animals have a safe, new, protected home, and the local people are able to continue to raise their crops without problems.
When does this rescue have to happen?
The rescue has got to happen by April, end of April, early May. So that's why we're rushing to raise the funds right now. We're working ahead on the logistics to make sure that we've got everything lined up. The plan is to rescue them April or May. Bluntly, if we're not able to for some reason, then they would start culling the elephants probably over the summer. So it's going to happen pretty quickly.
How can someone help out?
If people want to learn more or help out, they can visit our website, www.ifaw.org, or they can call us at 800-932-4329, 800-932-IFAW, and we can tell them more about it or accept donations to help save these animals and a lot of the other animals around the world, because it's not just elephants. We're working to save seals, whales, bears, tigers, dogs and cats, even the koalas and the animals down at the wildfires in Australia right now.
AJ Cady, thanks for doing the work that you're doing, for being on the Savage Nation about the all-important topic of our precious elephant friends. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.